Okay, so I am going to bring it back to some science because that is my want. So I want to start off by presenting the three knobs we can twiddle to get fusion to work, right? Just so that we can see how inertial fusion fits into this picture, right? So temperature, as Ian said, is a non-negotiable, right? It needs to be hot. And so really what you have are two other knobs that you can twiddle, right? So the density of your particles in the system and the time in which you can confine those together where you're producing net energy, right? Because if you don't do that, then it's game over, right? So you can imagine you can have a system that has a moderate density of particles, which you can keep together for a long period of time, or have a very dense system of particles, which you keep together for a short period of time, but do that over and over again. So it just so happens that the two sort of main approaches to fusion kind of fall into those categories. You've heard a lot about magnetically confined plasmas, which generally are a moderate density of particles kept together for a long time, right? Well, on the other side of things, you can have a system where you can compress some fuel to very high density until it kind of self-ignites. So almost like a diesel engine, but for nuclear fusion. And then you do that at 10 hertz, right? And that is what we call inertial confinement fusion, where you're actually, there's no active confinement there, right? You're just confining the fuel by its own inertia and it will disassemble, and that is when it is game over, right? So what does that look like? Well, you can do this with photons, right? Doesn't matter if it's lasers in the optical or whether it's X-rays from Hollerum. You irradiate your little pellet, which is a ball bearing size pellet of deuterium and tritium. You heat up the outer layer, and that expands very violently in a process called ablation. If any of you have had your eyes lasered, that's what happens to your cornea. Obviously not to this extent. And of course, if you've got something ablating outwards very violently, by Newton's third law, the rest has to collapse inwards, right? The material's compressed to about 1,000 times solid density. And eventually this piston action will cause the temperature in the center to rise very high. You get what we call a hot spot, and fusion occurs. Alpha particles are produced there, and then you get the next bit heating up, and more alpha particles are produced, and so forth. So you get a kind of fusion burn wave propagating through the fall. All right, this happens very quickly, you know, a fraction of a second. Okay, so you have to do that multiple times a second for a power station. So that's what ICF is. And just to say, there are two sorts of different flavors of inertial confinement fusion. One of which is you take a little gold can called a Hollerraum. This is a German word meaning cavity or empty space. The lasers fire into the can, it heats the can up, hot things radiate, right? And it just so happens that this can is so hot that the radiation is kind of in the soft X-ray. And those X-rays bathe your little capsule and do the compression. Now, I'm a big fan of the keep it simple, stupid principle. And so you could just do away with all that and then just fire the lasers directly onto the capsule and compress it using optical photons, right? Either way, the result is the same. You compress fuel to high density and get ignition, right? Well, hopefully, right? That's the aim. So just to tell you a little bit about the current scientific landscape, the focus is not here. I will say that now, right? Massive. Unique facility built at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in the Bay Area of California called the National Ignition Facility. Clues in the name, it was designed to get ignition. Let me just tell you what we mean by ignition here. Ignition is defined as the energy obtained due to fusion, right? Is it basically exceeds the laser energy that you couple in, right? It's not wall plug efficiency. These lasers are horrifically inefficient, 1% or less. So if you exceed the laser energy, that's great, but it's not net energy, right? So I just want to make that very, very clear what that definition is. All right. So that is what they have defined as ignition. And it's based on the indirect drive approach. So this firing into a gold can and then heating the fuel. And that's partly for issues of national security and stockpile stewardship, weapons physics. Otherwise, this facility wouldn't have been built, essentially. It's the largest laser system in the world. Frankly, as far as I'm concerned, the most beautiful laser system in the world. It's incredible. They've fielded over 50 different diagnostics, and anyone who's ever done any kind of experiments knows that getting 50 instruments to work simultaneously is just, well, a miracle, frankly. I'm always aware of the conservation of badness principle, where if you've got a set of diagnostics working on your experiment, you want to bring another one on. One of your other diagnostics has to fail, or somewhere over on another part of site, someone is having a bad time, because there's only a finite amount of scientific success in the world, right? So basically, they did not get ignition to begin with. There were lots of problems in terms of their predictive capability and so forth. But after an incredibly beautiful, careful set of experimental and theoretical work, they managed to achieve ignition, which frankly I'm incredibly excited about, because I started this game in 2001 and in advanced inertial fusion schemes. So to me, this is what I've been waiting for my whole career, frankly. So it's very exciting. They achieved this for the first time on the 5th of December 2022. They put two and a bit megajoules of laser energy in, and they get three and a bit out, which is a fantastic achievement. Just to kind of put into context what a megajoule is, there's about a megajoule of energy in a 4-bar Kit Kat, right? So, but I'm pretty sure you've never eaten a 4-bar Kit Kat in 10 nanoseconds. I know we've all given it a good go, but that's what's the sheer power of this system, right? So, demonstration of this is robust. It's not just a one-off. It's now been demonstrated many times. And I hear on the underground grapevine from people last week that we're now at the sort of 6 megajoule level, which is very exciting. So, but you didn't hear it from me. On the global stage, there are, I mean, let's be real, the NIF is the only show in town that's capable of getting ignition, but there are lots of supporting facilities around the world. And this is not an exhaustive picture of laser systems. There are lots of high rep rate, low energy systems, which we do our bread and butter on. But these are the ones that have been largely involved in inertial fusion energy. And I've included pulse power machines in here, of course, as well, because, you know, First Light Fusion is based on pulse power, right? And that's a different thing entirely, other than lasers. So you can see not so many systems around the world, but it's a global endeavor, and it's all mixed up. People go and use different facilities, but you know, it requires money to get access to these systems, right? So it's a big endeavor. So where do we sit in this picture? So we have a very well-established, decades-old community in this sort of in the fusion space here, in inertial fusion. It's a relatively modest sized community, 6 or 7 universities and some national labs and AWE Aldermaston, and now First Light Fusion involved in these spaces. We've been world leaders for a long time in the science. We've got high intensity lasers that we've led the world in with Vulcan and Gemini and Orion, world leading targetry capability, world leading in theory and computation, in the high energy density space. So we get a lot of bang for our buck for a relatively small community. We definitely punch above our weight. Also, many scientists who were from the UK, lots of trained at Imperial College, ended up at Lawrence Livermore and have been deeply involved in the NIF program, with the ignition discovery. And also the UK as well, and universities in the UK were involved in the ignition program as well. So we've got that expertise here as well, even if we don't have the big shiny laser, right? And we have a huge role to play in the future of IFE as well. Obviously, John's told you about this UK-US relationship, and we've had long-standing relationship with the US in this space. And it would be nice to have a bit more of a joined-up approach in that respect, I think. So one of the things that our relatively modest community has done to try and give ourselves a bigger collective voice, because really what we are is just a bunch of mavericks, right? And herding academics is like herding cats to a certain extent. So this is always going to be a bit of a challenge. But we've managed to form what we call the UK Inertial Fusion Consortium. It consists of about 90 members from the CLF, which is our sort of where we nucleate around, which is the lasers that are based at the Rutherford Appleton Laboratory. Indeed, I spent 10 and a half years working there before going to York. Imperial College, University of Warwick, University of Oxford, AWE Aldermaston, University of York, Strathclyde, Queen's University of Belfast, University of Lancaster, and of course, First Light Fusion, which is this company we now have in the UK based on inertial fusion, but not laser driven. It was established to try and foster a much more joined up approach to what we do, to foster collaboration, coordination, and try and get a bit more of a collective voice for our community in the UK. We've created a UK fusion, IFE fusion roadmap, looking at the period from 2021 when it was created to 2035. We do need to zhuzh it up a bit, needs a little bit of updating if you do happen to go and have a look at it, but certainly because it was created before the demonstration of ignition, right? So things have changed a little bit, and we ought to make hay while the sun is shining very brightly upon us. Also, inertial fusion is considered to be part of the Fusion Futures envelope, and so there are funds to support some of the activity, you know, for example, buying shots on Omega and things like that. So the chair of this committee is currently Robbie Scott. He's based at STFC Central Laser Facility. And so if you're interested in this, that's his contact details. Okay. And just to finally talk a little bit about the diffusion roadmap, because obviously, you know, the center of mass is not here. It's in the US when ignition has been demonstrated. So how can we possibly, as a modest community, compete with that? Well, we still have like very world leading stuff here, and where we think we can make a really big impact is on what comes next, right? Because the way NIF is set up, you're not going to get high gain. And what do I mean? How much energy you get out for what you put in, right? And so we have always been working on what comes next, the advanced inertial confinement fusion schemes that will get us to gains of 100 or more, right? I feel slightly vindicated because my PhD was on an advanced scheme, and we were considered mavericks at the time. So we're coming home to roost now, which is kind of exciting. So there's that, but then there's also the actual nitty gritty science of ignition as well, where we've always had expertise in the high energy density landscape. The roadmap focuses on a number of different areas. So certainly the hardcore research side of things, which is clearly where we do have expertise. Funding, thinking about how to increase the funding going into the IFE landscape and for what. Facilities and technology. So both in terms of we've got some of the best lasers in the world here, and some of the best technology as well in terms of enabling technologies, and particularly things like digital as well, right, in terms of our computational program that we have here. And they're also looking at the UK strategy at large. What do we do? How do we move forward in this kind of endeavor now that we know that ignition has been demonstrated, which does frankly make life a bit easier for ourselves. And not only that, we're looking through the lenses as well of how do we grow the community? How do we grow it equitably, right? Every decision must be made with a view to making our community more diverse and more equitable. And also, how do we train people? So we're very joined up. We obviously have a deep relationship with UKAEA anyway. I say we, York does, but so it's really important to be joined up in the training of people who are entering the fusion space, and there's loads of overlap between the IFE community and the MCF community. So I'm going to finish on that note, but if you are interested in this consortium, there is information here, and also just there's some resources here, so whoever gets these slides, there's just a whole bunch of stuff around the NIF ignition. The papers are out now. We ran a high gain jamboree here a couple of years ago at the Royal Society, and there's your inertial fusion consortium as well. So on that note, thank you so much for listening, and I hope that's given you a little bit of flavour of ICF in the UK.